Welcome to the Beard Group Corporate Restructuring Review for February 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. An audio recording of this presentation is available at bankrupt.com/free trial. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we'll discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filings. Second, large Chapter 11 filings troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors who emerge from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you're unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now, let's review the largest February 2011 Chapter 11 filings. Danilo Muñez reports that a number of the companies that filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with assets of at least $100 million continued to decline in the first 2 months of 2011. Six companies with assets at least $100 million filed for Chapter 11 in February, slightly up compared to five in January, yet the figures show a continued downward trend that saw eight mega cases commenced in December last year and 13 in November. In February, a year ago, seven mega cases were commenced, and the largest was by Penton Business Media Holdings, which had estimated assets and debts of between $500 million and $1 billion. But total mega cases filed reached 105 by the end of 2010, an average of about 9 cases per month. Of the 6 mega filers last month, 2 companies disclosed assets in excess of $1 billion. In contrast, there was no billion-dollar filings in January. The largest Chapter 11 case was by MSR Resort Golf Course LLC, formerly CNL Hotel and Resort, which filed in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan on February 1st. MSR listed $2.2 billion in assets and $1.9 billion in debt as of November 30, 2010. MSR Resorts and its affiliates own iconic luxury resort properties in the United States, the Grand Wailea Resort and Spa, the Arizona Baltimore Resort and Spa, the La Quinta Resort and Club, and PGA West Doral Golf Resort and Spa, and Claremont Resort and Spa. On January 28, 2011, CNL-AB LLC, a joint venture by affiliates of Paulson & Company and Winthrop, acquired the equity interest in the CNL portfolio through a foreclosure proceeding. Following the acquisition, five of the resorts with mortgage debt scheduled to mature February 1, 2011, were sent to Chapter 11 after failing to reach an agreement on debt extension with trust overseeing a securitized mortgage. A $1 billion mortgage backed by five of the former CNL properties and $525 million of mezzanine loans matured February 1st. The second largest bankruptcy filing was by Borders Group Incorporated, which listed $1.28 billion in assets and $1.29 billion in liabilities. Borders is the second largest book retailer in the U.S. As of January 29th, the debtors operated 642 stores under the Borders, Walden Books, Borders Express, and Borders Outlet names, as well as Borders branded airport stores. Borders filed its Chapter 11 petition in Manhattan February 16th. Lawyers at Kasowitz, Benson, Torres & Friedman, LLP in New York City serve as the bankruptcy counsel. Bankruptcy Judge Arthur Gonzalez approved Borders' strategic store reduction program to facilitate its reorganization and repositioning. That program called for closing of about 200 unperforming stores, which is roughly 30% of the national stores network. And these going out of business sales are going on now. Seahawk Drilling Incorporated, bankruptcy ranked third, The offshore drilling company sought creditor protection on February 11th in the U.S. bankruptcy court for the Southern District of Texas, listing $504 million in assets and $124 million in debts as of the petition date. Seahawk filed for bankruptcy to sell its assets to Hercules Offshore for $105 million in cash and shares. Seahawk said a Chapter 11 filing is warranted to protect and preserve its going concern value and to facilitate a prompt sale of substantially all of its assets for the benefit of all stakeholders. The bankruptcy court has set a March 15th sale hearing. Other large bankruptcy filings in February were Southwest Georgia Ethanol LLC, a unit of First United Ethanol Company, which owns and operates an ethanol production facility in Mitchell County, Georgia, producing 100 million gallons of ethanol annually. Southwest Georgia Ethanol sought bankruptcy protection on February 1st in the bankruptcy court for the Middle District of Georgia. The company listed $164 million in assets and $134 million in liabilities as of the petition date. TerraStar Corporation, which is engaged in the mobile communications business through its ownership of TerraStar Networks, is principal operating subsidiary in TerraStar Global. TerraStar Corporation and TerraStar Holdings followed its affiliates and subsidiaries in bankruptcy by filing a Chapter 11 petition in Manhattan on February 16th. TerraStar Corporation estimates its assets and liabilities at between $100 million and $500 million as of petition date. TerraStar Networks and 12 other affiliates sought protection from creditors in the same court on October 19, 2010. AES Thames LLC, which owns and operates coal-fired power plants in Montville, Connecticut, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on February 1st in bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware. The company listed estimated assets and liabilities of $100 million to $500 million as of the petition date. Notably, there were no pre-negotiated pre-packaged mega case last month. In contrast, three of the five mega cases in January were pre-packs for fiscal year 2010. A total of 35 pre-packaged or pre-arranged cases were filed, about one in every three. Three of the last month's mega cases were filed in the Southern District of New York. One went to Delaware, one went to the Southern District of Texas, one to the Middle District of Georgia. In January, four mega cases went to Delaware, and one went to the Northern District of Texas. Lehman Brothers Holdings Corp. remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets and $613 billion in total debts at the time of its filing. Three-quarters of the respondents in a recent American Bankruptcy Institute quick poll predict that bankruptcy filings will increase in fiscal year 2011. A total of 53% of respondents strongly agreed that filings would increase, while 21% somewhat agreed that filings would increase. Total bankruptcies from October 1, 2009 to September 30, 2010 were nearly 1.6 million, up 14% from fiscal year 2009 with 1.4 million filings, according to the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts. Bankruptcies have increased each fiscal year since 2005, when Congress overhauled the bankruptcy code in an attempt to reduce the number of bankruptcy filings. In addition to Chapter 11 debtors mentioned in Mr. Munoz's report, the Troubled Company Reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a free trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Now, let's turn to the topic of large Chapter 11 filing Troubled Company Reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlo Fernandez has compiled a list of seven companies he's convinced are nearing Chapter 11 bankruptcy: Newstream Capital, iStar Financial, Sabaro, Nebraska Book, United Western, Satellites Mexicanos, and LECG Corp. And we'll discuss each of these five troubled situations. Management of Newstream Capital, a Connecticut-based hedge fund that once boasted firm-wide assets of $1.2 billion has distributed a prepackaged joint plan of liquidation along with disclosure statement for a prepackaged Chapter 11 filing by its NewStream Secured Capital Fund U.S. LLC this month. However, before the plan prepackaged bankruptcy filing, creditors filed a petition in Delaware seeking to force the fund into involuntary bankruptcy, saying the fund owes $320 million to U.S. and Cayman creditors. The petitioning investors are collectively owed over $90 million, representing roughly 28% of the approximately $320 million owed to all U.S. and Cayman investors. The U.S. and Cayman investors claim they were misled with a costly 2009 restructuring plan that was a failure from the inception because, despite NewStream's misrepresentations that over 90% of the investors had approved, the largest investor and the most significant assets were excluded from its scope. Top Danny Law Offices, Mazio, Song & Bradham, LLP, and Stevens & Lee represent the investor group opposing the prepackaged bankruptcy plan. Joseph H. Houston, Jr., Esquire, at the law firm of Stevens & Lee in Wilmington, Delaware, said in court papers that NewStream and its management and the principal beneficiaries of purported senior liens are seeking to obtain releases for their improprieties through the prepackaged plan. iStar Financial provides custom-tailored investment capital to high-end private and corporate owners of real estate, including senior and mezzanine real estate debt, senior and mezzanine corporate capital, as well as corporate net lease financing and equity. iStar Financial reported a net loss of $58 million on $137 million of revenue for the 3 months ending December 31, 2010. Compared to a net loss of $153 million on $168 million of revenue in 2009. The company's balance sheet at December 31st showed $9.17 billion in assets, $7.48 billion in liabilities, and $1.69 billion in equity. iStar Financial in February engaged J.P. Morgan to arrange up to $3 billion in new senior secured credit facilities. The company said that failure to consummate the new credit facilities or alternative financing could materially adversely affect the company and its ability to continue as an ongoing concern. The Wall Street Journal's A.D. Pruitt said the deal, if successful, would enable iStar to refinance $2.2 billion in debt maturing in June, a major step in shoring up its balance sheet. The Journal noted iStar went through a restructuring in 2009 and was considered a bankruptcy risk a year ago. The Standard & Poor's said last month that iStar enters the second quarter. It remains vulnerable to another downturn in the commercial real estate markets if the moderate improvements in the market funding for commercial real estate assets reverses. In the longer term, management envisions returning to a balance sheet with low leverage and unsecured funding for its CRE assets. Mending its firm's portfolio, however, will likely take an extended period. Saboros, on March 3rd, entered into a third forbearance agreement with the company's lenders under its first lien credit agreement. The company remains in discussions with the various creditor groups and other stakeholders regarding long-term solutions to its capital structure. The third forbearance agreement provides that the holders of Sabaro's first lien debt will continue to temporarily forbear on an additional 30 days from the exercising certain rights and remedies under the first lien credit agreements. In light of its current liquidity, the capital and resources Sabaro did not make a $7.8 million interest payment due February 1st to the holders of the senior notes. That would have been an event of default under the first lien credit agreement. The lenders chose to extend the forbearance period to April 2nd. The Bank of New York serves as trustee under the indenture for the senior notes. the company's outstanding obligations under the indenture as of February 1 include accrued but unpaid interest are $158 million. Melville, New York-based Sbarro is the world's largest Italian quick-service restaurant concept and the largest shopping mall-focused restaurant concept in the world. The company has over 1,056 restaurants in 41 countries. The company's balance sheet as of September 30, 2010, showed $455 million in assets, $439 million in liabilities, and stockholders' equity of $16 million. The Wall Street Journal reported that Sbarro has hired the law firm of Kirkland & Ellis to advise it on restructuring its balance sheet. Sbarro has also hired investment bank Rothschild Incorporated for restructuring advice. NBZ Acquisition Corp. and its Nebraska book operating subsidiary have hired legal and financial advisors to help in restructuring debt and preparing for Chapter 11 filing if necessary, Bloomberg News reported, citing people familiar with the talks. If there is a distressed exchange or a Chapter 11 filing, Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Cerberus Capital Management LP could end up in control after purchasing debt at discount, those people said, according to Bloomberg. Headquartered in Lincoln, Nebraska, Nebraska Book Company operates on-campus and off-campus college bookstores. Revenues in the last 12-month period ending December 31, 2010, were roughly $608 million. The company reported a $16.3 million net loss for the quarter ending December 31st on net revenue of $69.2 million. The operating loss was $13.3 million. NBC Acquisition carries a CAA1 corporate family rating and CAA2 probability of default rating with a developing outlook from Moody's Investors Service. In February 2011, Moody's said that the downgrade from a CAA1 to a CAA2 reflects the heightened default risk for the company, which could include a transaction that Moody's would deem a distressed exchange as NBC faces significant near-term debt maturities. Substantially, all debt of Nebraska Book Company, the operating entity, matures before March 15, 2012. And because other securities will mature during 2011, Moody's believes the company must implement a comprehensive refinancing of its capital structure over the next 6 to 9 months. Moody's said the developing outlook reflects the uncertainty around NBC's ability to execute a refining plan in the very near term. United Western Bancorp said it was surprised in January that its bank subsidiary was seized by regulators and says the seizure could force it into bankruptcy. In February, United Western sued the Office of Thrift Supervision, the acting director of the OTS and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, arguing that none of the grounds cited by the acting director of the OTS existed at the time of the bank seizure. On January 21, 2011, the acting director of OTS, in cooperation with the FDIC, seized the bank and appointed the FDIC receiver based on three alleged grounds. One, the bank was undercapitalized and failed to submit an acceptable capital restoration plan within the time prescribed by statute. Two, the bank was likely to be unable to pay its obligations or meet the depositors' demands in the normal course of business. Three, the bank was in unsafe and unsound condition to transact business. United Western Chairman Guy A. Gibson called a seizure order appointing the FDIC as receiver arbitrary and capricious and said it lacked any rational basis in applicable law. The company's complaint refutes the allegations made by FDIC and the OTS, and importantly, among other facts, cites the bank's capital position provided no basis to accelerate the standard 45-day time frame for filing a capital restoration plan. On December 3, 2010, the OTS directed the bank to take a capital write-down with the intent of lowering the bank's capital ratio as much as necessary in order to create the illusion that the bank was not equitably capitalized. The result of this directive was to lower the bank's total risk-based capital ratio of 7.8%, which is only 0.2% below the 8.0% ratio required to be considered adequately capitalized. But for the OTS directive, the bank would have remained within the technical definition of adequately capitalized and not been subject to the requirement that it submit to CRP. Denver, Colorado-based United Western Bancorp is a holding company whose principal subsidiary, United Western Bank, is a community bank focused on Colorado's Front Range market and selected mountain communities. As of September 30, 2010, United Western Bank had around $2.05 billion in total assets and $1.65 billion in total deposits. First Citizens Bank and Trust Company did not pay the FDIC a premium for the deposits of United Western Bank. In addition to assuming all of its deposits of the failed bank, First Citizens Bank and Trust Company agreed to purchase essentially all of the assets. Satellites Mexicanos announced in January that it had reached an agreement with the holders of more than two-thirds of the outstanding principal amount of its second priority senior secured notes due 2013 regarding a comprehensive recapitalization to be effected through a prepackaged plan of reorganization to be filed in the United States Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware. The company said early this month has been advised that certain of the holders of its first priority senior secured notes due 2011 have retained Michael Sage Esquire at the law firm of Decrit LLP, and a March 2nd organizational meeting was scheduled to discuss the company's and note holders' next steps. The company said that under the terms of its proposed plan, holders of the first priority senior secured notes will be paid out in cash at par plus accrued interest without premium or penalty. The extent not paid pursuant to a bankruptcy court order authorizing the use of cash collateral or otherwise, the accrued and unpaid fees and expenses of the indentured trustees and the collateral trustees related to the first priority senior secured notes, including the accrued and unpaid fees and expenses for their counsel and the counsel to the ad hoc committee of holders of the first priority senior secured notes, will be paid in full in cash on the effective date of the plan. Satmex has also entered into a commitment letter with Jefferies Financing, providing for $325 million of committed senior secure exit financing, which may be used along with the proceeds of the previously announced $96 million fully backstopped rights offering of equity securities to holdings of second priority senior secured notes to, among other things, repay the first priority senior secured notes and fund the timely completion of SatMex 8, a satellite scheduled to be launched in 2012 to replace the company's SatMex 5 satellite. SatMex is a Mexico-based satellite service provider. SatMex fleet offers hemispheric and regional coverage throughout the Americas. SatMex balance sheet as of January 30th, 2010 showed $438 million in assets, U.S. $516 million in liabilities, and U.S. $78 million shareholder deficit. SatMex had a net loss of U.S. $6.12 million on U.S. $53 million of revenue for the 6 months ended June 30, 2010, compared with a net loss of U.S. $8.81 million on U.S. $50 million of revenue for the six-month period ended June 30, 2009. SatMex has a C issuer rating and a CA long-term corporate family rating with a negative outlook from Moody's Investor Service. LECG Corporation and LECG Partners LLP transferred certain assets of their U.S. tax consulting and business advisory and assurance practices of its consulting and governance business segment to Grant Thornton LLP. In conjunction with this transaction, approximately 33 managing directors of LECG and substantially all of the clients serving employees and administrative staff serving under these managing directors became employees of Grant Thornton. As consideration, Grant Thornton paid LECG $6.3 million, which included $175,000 per managing director that joined Grant Thornton. LECG expects to sell account receivables and work in progress attributed to the practices of Grant Thornton and to sell its UK-based consulting and business advisory practice to Grant Thornton or Grant Thornton UK member firm. When consummated, these transactions will represent the divestiture by LECG of substantial part of the consulting and governance segment. This transaction does not cover LECG's other European practices, which include economic consulting, forensic accounting services, and tax services. On February 28th, LECG entered into a 10th Amendment and limited duration waiver to the 2007 credit agreement arranged by the Bank of Montreal, the administrative agent, and the lenders for a limited period and subject to certain conditions, waived the LECG entity's failure to be in compliance with certain representations and warranties and financial and non-financial covenants under the facilities. The LECG entities have agreed to continue to pursue the sale of assets and business lines to raise funds needed to repay LECG's entities' obligations to the lenders by the end of March 2011. The LECG entities must operate their business in accordance with and agreed upon cash budget through the end of March 2011. They must also repay debts by at least $15 million from net cash proceeds by March 15th. LECG reported total assets of $248 million, $126 million in total liabilities, $26 million in convertible redeemable preferred stock, and $95 million in stockholder equity at September 30th. In addition to the challenged companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the Troubled Company Reporter provides ongoing reports about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheet in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in four large Chapter 11 cases that Troubled Company Reporter's editors monitor day by day. Ivy Magdadaro identified two major disputes in the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. These disputes involve litigation the company initiated against Deep Pocket defendants Barclays Capital Incorporated and J.P. Morgan Chase in an event to recover billions of dollars for Lehman creditors. Ms. Magdadaro reports that Lehman Brothers lost in its attempt to recover its alleged $11 billion in windfall related to Barclays' acquisition of Lehman's brokerage unit. The bankruptcy judge, James Peck, in the Southern District of New York, ruled on February 22nd that the transaction was fair. Barclays acquired the Lehman unit in September 2008, shortly after Lehman's file for bankruptcy. U.S. regulators recommended the quick removal of the sale, and thus the transaction was completed in a week. Barclays was the sole bidder for Lehman's assets. In November 2009, Lehman filed a lawsuit alleging that the sale involved an exchange of assets worth $50 billion to $52 billion, but only got $45 billion for it. Barclays filed a countersuit claiming some $3 billion in certain assets. In the ruling, Judge Peck said the sale process may have been imperfect, but it was still adequate under the exceptional circumstances of Lehman's week. The Barclays transaction, the court held, provided the means for the most favorable disposition of the assets with the least amount of risk. Judge Peck said the lapses in disclosure at the 2008 sale hearing did not affect the fairness or alter the outcome of the hearing and are not characterized as willful misconduct. In effect, Judge Peck rejected Lehman's claims that Barclays received an undeserved windfall from the 2008 sale. The court also held that Barclays stands in to get at least $800 million of the $3 million sought in its countersuit. Barclays had been in a dispute with James Giddens, the trustee of the Lehman brokerage business, over $2.3 billion of the clearance box assets, $769 million in the customer's reserve accounts, and $4 billion in managed assets. Mr. Giddens is winding down Lehman's brokerage business under the authority of the Securities Investor Protection Corp. Judge Peck said Barclays is entitled to the remaining clearance box assets, but it must also forego the margin assets and might get securities in the reserve accounts if there isn't a deficit for customers. The court's ruling upheld the right of Lehman assets to some $4.8 billion, which will remain available for customers. The trial for the Lehman's Barclays lawsuit ran its course from April to November of last year. Lehman's case is the biggest corporate bankruptcy filed so far in U.S. history. Lehman's Brothers is also involved in an $8.6 billion lawsuit against J.P. Morgan Chase for collateral damages. J.P. Morgan had been Lehman's banker at the time it filed for bankruptcy and sold its brokerage unit to Barclays. Lehman seeks to recover some $8.6 billion of collateral J.P. Morgan allegedly extracted from Lehman's using insider information a few days before the bankruptcy filing. Ms. Magdalero reports that J.P. Morgan filed a revised countersuit in mid-February in Manhattan Bankruptcy Court, where the suit is pending, says Barclays, and Lehman called certain Lehman assets toxic waste and goat poo and knowingly excluded those assets from their sale agreement, but misled J.P. Morgan into taking those bad assets. J.P. Morgan cited emails from Lehman employees in making its allegations. J.P. Morgan said Lehman left it with $25 billion in unpaid loans secured by undesirable assets like those left out of Barclays' sale. The revised lawsuit also reflected an allegation of fraudulent inducement to lend, saying that when J.P. Morgan made Lehman a $70 billion intraday loan on the day Lehman filed for bankruptcy, Lehman knew that J.P. Morgan would not be able to recover any claims through the collateral. Lehman filed a suit against J.P. Morgan in May. J.P. Morgan filed the original countersuit in December in response to Lehman's accusations. The parties have filed motions to dismiss the other's claims. Ms. Magdadero reports that the major dispute over the $13 billion leveraged buyout of Tribune in 2007 is expected to be among the issues taken up at a two-week hearing before bankruptcy judge Kevin Carey on Tribune's restructuring plans that started earlier this month. Tribune creditors formally filed lawsuits over the LBO in November, naming lenders J.P. Morgan Chase and Merrill Lynch Capital Corporation, Tribune executive Sam Zell, and other directors and officers. The suit seeks to recover not less than $178 million. The creditors have agreed to stay prosecution of the suit while the company is putting full effort on its ongoing plan approval process. Disputes over the LBO have placed holders of about $2.5 billion in Tribune debt from before the LBO against lenders owed more than $10 billion for funding the buyout. Judge Carey is being asked to choose between two organization proposals for Tribune. Judge Carey has said he might reject both proposals. The competing plans both aim to distribute $6.75 billion in new stock and other consideration to creditors, but they differ on the position about claims related to the 2007 buyout. The first competing plan is backed by Tribune Company. The company's plan is sponsored by J.P. Morgan along with hedge funds Angelo Gordon and Oak Tree Capital Management in exchange for immunity from potential lawsuits creditors might commence over the lender's role in funding the LBO transaction. In return for releases, the lenders agree to allocate $400 million to Tribune creditors. The other competition plan is backed by the Aurelius Capital Management, one of Tribune's largest bank holders. The Aurelius plan seeks the formation of a litigation trust so that the buyout lenders led by J.P. Morgan may be sued for extending loans to Tribune and thereby causing Tribune to become insolvent. Aurelius has said in court papers that a lender's lawsuit could recover more than $1.57 billion for Tribune creditors. Aurelius further predicts a 57% chance of victory in potential lender lawsuit. Tribune is the second largest newspaper publisher in the U.S. It filed for bankruptcy in December of 2008. Washington Mutual Incorporated will seek approval of additional disclosure materials on March 21st and seek confirmation on May 2nd of the reorganization plan modified to comply with Judge Mary Walrath's January 7th opinion. The sixth amended version of WAMU's plan, which was filed with the court on February 8th, still contemplates the distribution of funds to holders of allowed claims of more than $7 billion, including the $4 billion of previously disputed funds on deposit with J.P. Morgan Chase Bank. The modified plan is still premised on a global settlement of lawsuits involving WAMU, J.P. Morgan, and Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. WAMU sued FDIC and J.P. Morgan for over $12 billion after WAMU's banking unit was seized and sold in 2008 for $1.88 billion. The deadline to approval of the settlement has also been extended through the end of April. Judge Walrath rejected the prior version of the plan in January, saying the third-party releases under the plan were too broad and inappropriate. In the new plan, in accordance with Judge Walrath's directive, all creditors are given the option both to vote for or against the plan and to opt out of releases being given to third parties. In her opinion, in January, Judge Walrath said it was fair for creditors to forfeit a distribution under the plan in return for the ability to sue third parties. This recent development means WAMU won't hit its goal of exiting bankruptcy by the end of the first quarter. A group of Tucson incorporated lenders led by Citicorp North America won an appeal from bankruptcy court ruling that required them to turn over more than $400 million to the company's creditors. In a February 11 ruling, Judge Alan Gold of the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida criticized bankruptcy Judge John Olson for making legally and factually unsupportable conclusions. In October 2009, bankruptcy Judge Olson ruled that the payment to lenders, which came from a $500 million loan to TUSA obtained in July of 2007, were fraudulent transfers made while the company was insolvent. TUSA made the payment to the lenders in light of its role as guarantee of a joint venture loan obtained by its subsidiary for the purchase of TransEastern properties. The joint venture defaulted on its obligation and TUSA had to enter into a refinancing pact to settle those obligations. According to Judge Gold, the payment to the lenders was not a fraudulent transfer, but rather payment of an outstanding debt by the party that it owed it. Judge Gold also rejected the bankruptcy judge's finding that the transfer at issue was made using any subsidiary's property. He said evidence showed that the subsidiaries did not receive proceeds of the 2007 loan and had no power to distribute it. Judge Gold also disagreed that the subsidiaries did not obtain value in the form of amendment, default, and bankruptcy. He maintained that 2007 settlement with the lenders constituted indirect value to the subsidiaries because it allowed their parent to avoid imminent default under the 2005 loan. The troubled company reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Julianne Lopez reports about the Chapter 11 debtors who emergence from bankruptcy has been delayed. Tribune Company, W.R. Grace & Company, Lehman Brothers, Washington Mutual. Ms. Lopez reports that the two-week confirmation hearing Tribune's Chapter 11 case began earlier this month. The company and Aurelius Capital firing the opening shots and presented the court with two rival plans. The first plan is a restructuring plan favored by senior creditors, the company and many unsecured creditors based on a settlement of legal claims surrounding the company's 2007 leveraged buyout. The plan would essentially shift the company's debt and assets into hands of J.P. Morgan Chase and other lenders. The other plan, backed by Aurelius Capital Management, is a competing plan offered by junior bondholders that would open the case up to massive litigation in which each creditor would have a chance to seek its own recovery in the courts. The plan would take a more aggressive stance toward getting funds from those who push Tribune's leverage buyout, namely its chief executive, Sam Zell. After hearing opening settlement from both sides, Judge Carey warned he might reject both plans. The judge warned it seemed as an attempt to push both sides to negotiate a settlement that could finally end the two-year bankruptcy case, but there were no immediate signs of compromise. David Kurtz, a managing director of Lazard, testified that a proposed legal settlement underpinning Tribune's Chapter 11 plan is a reasonable solution to allow the publisher to emerge from bankruptcy. Mr. Kurtz was the first witness in the two-week trial. In W.R. Grace, several parties took an appeal from Judge Fitzgerald's order confirming the company's joint plan of reorganization. The Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, a group of lenders under the pre-petition bank credit facilities and Garlock Sealing Technologies, filed the appeals. The State of Montana, Her Majesty the Queen and the Right of Canada, and BNSF Railroad Company have also asked the court to reconsider its January 31st confirmation order. To address motions seeking a clarification of her January 31st ruling, Judge Fitzgerald added a statement to her decision emphasizing that she is recommending that the district court enter an order issuing and affirming the confirmation order. Grace's joint plan is now before the United States District Court for the District of Delaware for the final stamp of approval. This is a necessary step before Grace may exit Chapter 11. Grace will mark its 10th year in bankruptcy April 2nd. Mr. Lopez reports that certain Lehman note holders have opposed the approval of a rival restructuring plan proposed by an ad hoc group of creditors led by Paulson & Company. In mid-December, the note holder contended that the treatment of Class 5 subordinate note holders under the rival plan is unfair and would breach contractual obligations to Class 3 senior note holders. They also questioned whether the Bank of New York Mellon, which acts as a subordinate note holder's indenture trustee, is adequately representing them and whether that representation is being done in good faith. Lehman amended its plan in January to offer bondholders more money after some creditors didn't support the company's previous proposals. Undergoing the amendment, creditors that hold senior unsecured claims against Lehman cover 21.4% of their claims, up from 17.4% in the original plan. The company's general unsecured creditors recover 19.8% of their claims, up from 14.7%. Creditors of Lehman subsidiaries also see better recoveries. The company's amended plan receives the support of the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors. Lehman's lawyer, Harvey Miller Esquire, at Wheel Gotchel, said the company's plan to end the bankruptcy case this year after creditors vote on its liquidation proposal. Lehman, which filed the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history, has said many liquidation assets may take years to sell to pay creditors after Chapter 11 plan is approved. Lehman has been in bankruptcy since September 15, 2008. Washington Mutual filed a new reorganization plan and a new settlement agreement in February. Judge Walrath rejected an earlier version of the plan in January and gave WaMu a list of things to change. The company said the new plan and the new settlement had been altered to comply with Judge Walrath's ruling. It dropped its plan to sell stock in the only piece of the company that will exit bankruptcy, a reinsurance company that would be co-owned by the hedge fund creditors. WaMu says the amended plan will satisfy the lingering concerns of the court, and a new hearing is scheduled to review the new plan on March 21st. The plan is centered around resolving disputes related to FDIC's sale of the company to J.P. Morgan in 2008. WaMu has been in bankruptcy since September 2008. Moving on, Psyche Marikon Castilian reports about five companies who issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of the reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases. Havo Beverage, a California-based manufacturer of coffee and tea-based dispensed beverages, drink mixes, and flavor systems, filed for bankruptcy on January 24th. It filed a plan of reorganization a little less than a month after, on February 15th. The company's plan provides for issuance of new shares of common stocks upon emergence under the plan in full satisfaction of the claims of certain creditors' classes. The new stock will be distributed as follows. Holders of DIP financing claims aggregated 3 million will receive roughly 28% of the new stock. Holders of 5.8 million of senior notes will receive roughly 53% of the stock of the reorganized debtor. Holders of 23.7 million in subordinate notes will receive roughly 19% of the new stock. The bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware will convene a hearing on March 16th to consider adequacy of the disclosure statement explaining Havo's plan. If the disclosure document gets the bankruptcy court's stamp of approval, the company's plan will be sent to creditors for a vote. Judge Martin Glenn of the bankruptcy court for the Southern District of New York adjourned to March 29th the hearing to consider confirmation of the plan of reorganization filed by RHI Entertainment to allow more these principal lenders. RHI, a New York-based developer, producer, and distributor of paid-for-television movies, miniseries, and other television programming worldwide, filed a prepackaged Chapter 11 case in December. The plan had been accepted by all of the second lien debt and 94% of the first lien obligators. Under the plan, debtors will enter into new term loans and issue new common stock and warrants. The existing public equity will be canceled. The plan provides that on the effective date, number one, holders of the debtor's first lien debt will receive one, $300 million of new term loan obligations, and two, roughly 99% of the new common stock subject to dilution, and two, holders of the debtor's second lien debt will receive one, roughly 1% of new common stock subject to dilution, two, new warrants representing 15% of ownership of the new stock common, of the new common stock on a fully diluted basis, and three, a limited fee and expense reimbursement of up to $250,000. A bankruptcy judge in Richmond, Virginia, will convene a hearing on March 29th to consider confirmation of the plan reorganization filed by Chesapeake Corporation. the former paperboard and plastic packaging manufacturer, now named Canal Corporation. The company will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence under a plan. General unsecured creditors with $200 million in claims are projected to recover about 0.4% of the amount they're owed. Holders of $50 million in revenue bonds will receive 2.28 cents on the dollar for their claims, and holders of $250 million in subordinate notes get nothing. Oriental Trading, the U.S.'s largest direct merchant of value-priced party supplies, arts, crafts, toys, and novelties, and a leading provider of school supplies and affordable home decor and giftware, exited Chapter 11 on February 14th after 6 months stay there. The company filed a prepackaged Chapter 11 case in August after reaching agreement on the terms of prearranged plan of organization with a substantial majority and principal amount of the company first lien lenders. Under the plan, the company reduced its funding debt by more than 70% to $200 million. OTC Holding Corp., the holding entity, reached its settlement with first and second lien lenders in December. Originally, second lien lenders were to get only warrants of 2.5% of the stock with a strike price based on an enterprise value of $427.5 million of the company. They will instead get 5-year warrants for 5% of the stock in the reorganized company based on a $422 million enterprise value. They will also receive 5-year warrants for 4.5% based on a $447 million enterprise value. The plan gives the stock in the reorganized debtor plus cash or a new $200 million second lien note to senior lenders owed $403 million. As a result of another settlement with the creditors committee, first lien lenders are provided $1.1 million for unsecured creditors with $6.8 million in claims. Tronox, a chemical company, emerged from bankruptcy on February 14th after a 2-year stay. Pursuant to its amended joint plan of reorganization, which was confirmed in November, Tronox will use a combination of debt and new money equity investment to meet its working capital needs and fund distributions required by the plan, which will include A, total funding first lien debt of no more than $470 million, and B, proceeds of a $185 million rights offering open to substantially all unsecured creditors and bank stopped by certain holders of Tronox preparations unsecured notes. Holders of general unsecured claims will receive their pro rata share of 50.9% of the common equity of reorganized Tronox and receive the opportunity to participate in the rights offering for an aggregate of up to 45.5% of the common equity of or reorganized Tronox. Equity holders in Tronox Incorporated will receive a package of warrants consisting of two tranches to purchase their pro rata share of a combined total of 7.5% of the common equity reorganized Tronox. And that ends the Beard Group Corporate Restructuring Review for February 2011, brought to you by the editors of the Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nancy Frazier or Charlie Covell at 240-629-3300. That number again is 240-629-3300, or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. Now, tune in to our next restructuring review on April 16th. Thank you for listening.